Go, Aaron.
Good evening. In mood and language better suited to an espionage novel than the delicate world of the Western Alliance, the British Foreign Secretary today pounced on what he termed the nest of professional spies and amateur traitors who were turning NATO headquarters into an instrument whose only true function is folly. We begin our coverage with Edward Town in London.
Take it.
The British Foreign Secretary used the annual meeting of NATO's foreign ministers
as
his forum for denouncing breaches of security. Any breach of security could upset the delicate balance in
Europe. I think I'm starting to perspire.
Intelligence sources believe that information involving NATO military deployment was passed on to Eastern Bloc nations.
Are you seeing this?
The information was apparently delivered in coded messages
so, Chiron?
Written on discarded paper bags from the NATO cafeteria. At least six cafeteria workers are under...
5 seconds!
Edward Town, London.
The sub-bases referred to are located in five countries. Norway, Belgium, the Netherlands, Spain, as well as Great Britain.
This is more than Nixon ever sweated.
Our own State Department was rocked, not only by the revelation, but from the highly unusual persistence of the State Press Corps.
Nice time.
Martin Klein reports on the ruckus at Foggy Bottom.
The State Department's
just how noticeable is this?
Breakdown at was a swift and unusual
criticism of the alliance. Are you here today?
Do you have a big one?
Oh, good, Susie. Hurry.
10 seconds.
Will severely limit NATO's ability.
5 seconds.
Martin Klein, State Department.
Everything's fine, Aaron.
A bomb exploded on a railroad bridge outside of Madras, India, sending a passenger train hurtling more than 200 feet down a mountain slope. Railway officials in New Delhi said the bomb had been wired to the suspension bridge and had been detonated by a remote control device. 120 people were reported injured, at least 22 people dead.
Commercial?
I wish I were one of them.
Pre-recorded live from Pennsylvania and Nebraska, U.S. of A. It's the Bob and Elvis Show.
Right on!
With Bob Seska and Elvis Dingledean.
There were times when I was doing Jack that I actually felt retarded, like really retarded. When I was playing the character.
When you was a character.
Yeah, I mean, as Jack, definitely.
Yeah, yeah. Is that working with Mercury? Everybody knows you never go full retard.
What do you mean?
Check it out. Dustin Hoffman, Rayman, look retarded, act retarded, not retarded. Count two picks, cheat cards, autistic, sure, not retarded. You got Tom Hanks, Forrest Gump. Slow, yes, retarded, maybe, braces on his leg, but he charmed the pants off Nixon and won a ping pong competition? That ain't retarded. You went full retard, man. Never go full retard.
The following podcast contains harsh language, nudity, graphic violence, adult situations, and a healthy obsession with empirical reality. The Bob and Elvis Show.
It's great. Albert Brooks is on Twitter now.
Oh, yes, he is.
And,
desperately trying to get his attention.
Yeah, I've noticed that.
I'm a huge Albert Brooks fan. Huge,
and this is
huge.
This is something new that you do? You get celebrities' attention on Twitter? Is that...
Sometimes, well, you know, sometimes it's hit or miss. Let's put it that way.
Yeah,
I mostly go after my favorite authors, and my very favorite author of all time, living, retweeted some or responded to me today. He does every now and then, so I'm happy for now.
Who's this? Who did that?
William Gibson.
Oh yeah,
yeah, Great Dismal on Twitter. Great Dismal.
I was actually busting on you.
Yes, I know.
Okay,
I'm aware. It's fine.
You love them, the celebrities.
I do. Were you watching the West Wing Brawl 11 last night?
No. What? What happened?
Oh, it was fucking fantastic. It was Dule Hill and Josh Molina going, and what Dule Hill on his phone was texting with Bradley Whitford, and Bradley Whitford and Josh Molina were duking it out. And Dule Hill was sort of passing it along. It was fantastic. They were just shitting on each other, left and right. It was hilarious.
What was the topic? What were they talking about?
It was just, you know, like Josh Molina threw a jab at Bradley Whitford about working and Bradley Whitford came back about him not working, and I mean, it was just very personal.
Okay. So it may have been play fighting, right? No, it wasn't
totally
really a serious fight.
Yeah, but it was, but it was fascinating, and lots of people started hashtagging it and following it, and made a few new West Wing fan friends, so that was good. But yeah, I do tend to stalk my favorites on Twitter.
Yeah, I mean, you are a stalker. I mean,
that's, I am.
I mean, go to your Twitter feed, which is, if you don't know what it is, it's Elding.
Yeah.
And then just, and then you can see, you know, you stalking celebrities. Every other tweet's like, hey, look at me.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. There are, they try to be clever, but they're usually not. They're usually not at all. And most of them fail, but every now and then I get a little tip of the hat. You never know.
Yeah, of course. There's nothing better. It was like,
What the fuck are they there for? What are they there for? It's a public timeline, and they know people read. So what are they there for? I'm just supposed to not try to talk to them? I don't understand. Why am I being made? It's there. It's, you know, I'm going to try and respond. I'm going to try and get their attention. Hey, over here.
And you're not the only one. Yeah, I mean, you're not alone. It's not like you're the only one who's stalking celebrities almost to the point of being kind of weird and creepy.
It's not. But
you're not the only. You're not the only one doing it.
But it's not weird and creepy. It's not like I'm going. It's not like I'm Chris Farley and, you know, who you remember when you were. That was awesome. Yeah. I try to say witty things.
Yeah, you're trying to impress them.
No, I would just like a little. I would like a little feedback from these people whose careers I have helped by buying their merchandise and seeing their films over and over and over again. I may have seen Mother. I may have seen every one of Albert Brooks's movie conservatively 30 or 40 times. He is absolutely brilliant, except for The Muse, which sucked it hard.
Yeah. I had
two of my least favorite females in it of all time, Sharon Stone and Annie McDowell, who it's amazing that I can stomach Groundhog Day. That's a testament to how good that script is and how good Bill Murray is, that that movie's watchable with Annie McDowell. She's fucking awful.
Yeah.
She's retarded.
I was really kind of debating which Albert Brooks clip to play at the top of the show. And it was either, I was just trying to think of my favorite Albert Brooks clips from his, from all of his movies. And it was down to the broadcast news clip that I played, which is him having the flop sweats. It's kind of a visual
clip. It's a very visual clip. So that, I'm going to go ahead and call that a big clip fail there.
That was a clip fail? Yeah. See, now I assume that most people have seen that, and so that they're imagining.
Yeah, our audience probably has.
Our audience has.
It's a kind of a political movie in some ways.
And if you haven't seen that clip, then you're banned from the show. You cannot listen to the show if you have not ever seen that clip, or that, at least that scene from broadcast news.
Oh, but you could go any 90 or 180 seconds of defending your life is gold.
Yeah.
Anything or anything out of Lost in America, I mean, even Modern Romance. I mean, just some brilliant. Do you know who? You know Super Dave Osborne?
Yeah.
You know that's his brother, right?
No, they're not brothers.
Albert Brooks and Super Dave are brothers. Albert Brooks's real name. Yes, Albert Brooks's real name is Albert Einstein. Super Dave is Bob Einstein. They're brothers.
Yeah. No.
They are.
That can't be. They're not. They're from the same gene pool. That's like Randy Quaid and Dennis Quaid being from the same gene pool. I don't buy that either.
Well, yeah, that's true. But Super Dave and Albert Brooks are brothers. And Super Dave was in Modern Romance, which was one of the funniest. I just love Albert Brooks.
Yeah. Well, the other scene I was looking at was the scene from Mother, where he's having lunch in the kitchen and she's wheeling out all these things out of the freezer, the big block of Swiss cheese that, you know, she.
It's very hard to find. How can it be hard to find? It's all here. Oh, there's just some great lines. Oh, I'm not gonna. There's a Baskin and Robbins three blocks from me. Oh, I'm not gonna fall for that. What are you falling for? They have ice cream there. Some of the greatest, just one-liners in that movie. Just I fucking love that movie.
Yeah, the protective layer of ice,
name the clear hard crap that forms on the top of ice cream. Look under the protective ice. I love you, honey. I know you think you do.
She shoves the spoonful of sherbet in his mouth, and he says, as it's rolling out of his mouth, it tastes like an orange foot.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
I put all your food on this. It's like what happened. It's like what it happened one night for food. It's just there's so many great lines in that movie.
So, yeah, you know, that was maybe I should have played that clip.
Yeah, you should totally. Yeah. You would have won my heart forever. And dedicated to my creepy Albert Brooks Twitter stalking.
Yeah. It was you know, the clip though is 4 minutes. And so excising a great 90 seconds out of that or 2 minutes out of that would have been a challenge because there's so much great stuff. There's the stuff with the lamb with, you know, do you care about the animals and, and with the salad and he eats the, you know,
Smithsonian
cafeteria.
Yeah. What do you mean lettuce doesn't get old? You've never heard of wilted lettuce? You're freezing everything. It's a good invention, but you're not supposed to put everything in there.
And it's the worst looking salad. There's like a pathetic slice of, like a thin slice of tomato.
Translucent tomato.
The iceberg lettuce. And she makes all of her salads at the beginning of the week and then freezes them.
Yeah. All right, so. I've got spaghetti and meat sauce, but it's got meat sauce. You can't even. No, mother. I can't. Oh God, it's a funny movie.
I was like to see who these guys actually end up following. Like Albert Brooks is following Steve Martin.
Steve Martin.
Mm-hmm. Conan O'Brien, I think, is in there. Mm-hmm. No, maybe not.
He is.
And then like Howard Stern, he's following Howard Stern. Is it maybe 11 people? And I'm remembering two.
Yeah, very few. I mean, he just started. He's following Kevin Pollak.
Yeah,
and Paul Feig, and Sarah Silverman.
Kevin Pollak does an impression of Albert Brooks.
Oh, he does a great, he's really great. Does amazing impressions just in general. Yeah, but he's following very few people. Yeah, Kimberly Brooks. Oh, ooh, maybe I can stalk his wife.
There you go.
Kidding.
You've got your in.
I just love Albert Brooks. I cannot tell you how much I love Albert Brooks. I have since I was a very wee slip of a boy. And it's just neat to – I mean, in what other forum now with the technologies can you just kind of sidle up next to one of your heroes, one of your comic heroes?
Yeah.
And, you know, pathetically wallow at their feet. Their virtual feet. Fuck it. I won't talk to Albert Brooks anymore. Will that make you happy?
No, it won't make me happy. Whatever makes you happy makes me happy, dear.
Yeah, whatever. Busting on me, like two or three weeks in a row now, fucking busting on me. Find yourself another co-host.
Yes, I'm saying that.
If I'm displeasing you so badly.
No, I love you, sir.
Whatever.
Hey, it's the Bubble Genius Bob and Elvis show brought to you exclusively by BubbleGenius.com. WWW, full stop, BubbleGenius, full stop, COM. Pure products, pure genius, Bubble Genius. We'll hear from them in a little bit. I want to say and make this perfectly clear, this CIA, this big story from Reuters, the CIA shoes on the ground in Libya, it's a bullshit scandal. It really, really is. There's MSNBC. Yeah. Well, I mean, God, there's CIA people everywhere. There's CIA people at your mom's house. There's
probably.
Yeah. Saying there's CIA agents on the ground in Libya, we assume that's the case.
Yeah, you better hope there are.
It's not like everyone wagging their fingers at the president saying, "Oh, you said no boots on the ground." Well,
Yeah. Boots on the ground is a euphemism for
military
invasion. Yeah. I mean, occupation and invasion. You don't occupy with a no-fly. So, you know, you better pray to God there's CIA on the ground, because what we really need is some fucking intelligence. I need to know, you know, like I said last week, I need to know who these rebels are, what the fuck they want, what we're going to get when Momar, you know, ends up in a villa in Elba. You know, because that's what's going to happen. His cabinet's falling apart. Musa Fusa or whatever the fuck is bailing out. And now, I mean, they're going to be running, fleeing, screaming from him soon. And he'll end up with a palace on some island somewhere. So then what? And the CIA are the guys that are going to tell us that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hopefully. Well, hopefully.
And, I mean, we should actually be looking at this story and going, thank fucking God there's CIA agents on the ground. And we're not waiting for secondhand information from, you know, the rebel forces, you know, who knows what kind of information we're going to get from them. We need real hardcore information. If we're going to be over there, that's what we do. I mean, there were probably CIA agents on the ground prior to all of this. They're probably just there. They're probably just hanging out there. We're no fly zone bombing? Okay. We better provide some information about that, too.
Yeah. Well, let's hope.
MSNBC calling it a shadow army.
Oh, for fuck's sake. Right, that's what they do.
Yeah.
Doi. Is it this just in? CIA stands for Central Intelligence Agency. It apparently seems to be some sort of spy organization. I.E. Yeah. Right. Fucking dorks. I mean, that's what imagine the imagine the war in Afghanistan in the 80s against the Soviets with this media that we've got now, with the internets and the media and the 24-hour news cycle or the 5-minute news cycle. We would never have gotten anything fucking done. We never would have driven the Soviets out. I mean, no matter what you want to say about how that ended up, it didn't end well. We don't close well. But we ran that masterfully and completely quietly. And I mean, just hefty bags full of cash and boxes full of Stinger missiles. And pretty much nobody knew about it until it was too late. I mean, imagine trying to do that today. Oh, this just in. CIA agents in Kabul. Oh, really? Oh, fuck us. Well, now it's World War III.
You know what I saw? It was on MSNBC, and they were suggesting that there were 12 CIA agents.
Ooh,
on the ground. 12.
A total of 24 boots on the ground.
This is the big shadow army.
Mm-hmm. Watch out.
12.
Yeah, because the CIA is so crazy good at what they do. Fail. I know it from the ground up. I mean, I know I'm very intimately familiar with the overall intelligence community from all the three-letter agencies, and it sucks. Mm-hmm. They don't have their ass from a fucking hole in the ground. Mm-hmm. They got no Arabic speakers. They just were never able to retask from the Cold War. They did that Cold War really well for an intelligence. I mean, it kind of sucked. They missed a bunch of stuff, like the end of it. They didn't foresee, you know, the wall coming down or communism ending, or they didn't see the coup coming against Gorbachev. They missed that one. They missed everything. But at least they knew how to do that thing.
Yeah.
Now they just have no idea what they're doing. I mean, because the best intelligence now is human intelligence. It really always has been. We all get fancied up with signals intelligence and electronics and blah, blah. But really, the best intelligence is what they call human intelligence. And we got none of that because you're just not getting any brown people in the CIA anymore that can go undercover in a jihadi group and not get his balls cut off and fed to him. I mean, that would just be terrifying. I'd rather be Donnie Brasco than an undercover guy in a jihadi organization.
Yeah. Well, here it is. You know, I was saying maybe the CIA agents were on the ground there prior to all of this. Well, here's the headline. CIA agents were in Libya before secret Obama order.
Good doy. And they're spinning that to mean that Obama was planning this all along.
Mm-hmm, right. And we'll get to why he was planning this. There's a big conspiracy theory about that, which we'll get
Doyle.
To.
Oil!
Coming from Louis Gohmert.
Maybe a little credibility to this one if you're talking about the whole, you know, protect the European oil pipeline thing.
No, this is a much more ridiculous one, which we'll talk about in a second. U.S. intelligence operatives were on the ground in Libya before President Barack Obama signed a secret order authorizing covert support for anti-Gaddafi rebels, U.S. government sources told Reuters. CIA personnel were sent in to contact opponents of Libyan leader Muammar Gaddafi and assess their capabilities, two U.S. officials said. Quote, they're trying to sort out who could be turned into a military unit and who couldn't, said Bob Baer, a former CIA case officer whose memoirs were turned into the Hollywood thriller Syriana.
Mm-hmm.
Baer said the U.S. operatives most likely entered Libya on the ground through neighboring Egypt and are lightly equipped. Shadow Army.
I trust that guy, Bob Baer. He and his wife are total badasses. They're like married spies. They're just a walking Hollywood movie. I mean, it's unbelievable. He's a total badass.
Yeah. He had his fingernails ripped out.
Oh, yeah. But he was on Fresh Air or some NPR show. We can't talk about NPR. just talking about the things in his daily life that are just so weird for him. Like, if somebody breaks suddenly in front of him in a car, his first instinct is to ram it.
Yeah,
it's just the complete opposite of the real world. It's if a car, no matter where he is in the world, if a car in front of him comes to a sudden stop, his first instinct is fucking ram it. Yeah. I'm like, boy, you just living in a completely different world when that's your first thought. But he should know. He's been – that guy's a badass.
Yeah.
And his wife's a spy too.
Mm-hmm.
And governments call him asking him, hey, how can I – you know, I want to overthrow something or I want to hide $1 trillion. I mean, he just gets the wackiest phone calls. It'd just be awesome to be that guy.
I mean, still.
I'd be the crookedest motherfucker in the world if I – it's so good that I'm not in any of that. I would be so crooked. I would have mattresses full of money and I'd just be having people killed from like my high school days. I would just be – if I was a spy and had the training and all that, I'd just be so fucking crooked.
If you were a spy, you'd be in the shrubs of every celebrity in Hollywood.
Well, that'd just be my hobby. But I mean, for the money, I would just be – I'd be the guy in the movie that they would all have to come and kill because I just immediately – just so rogue that I would have to die. Did you see that Clooney movie, The American, where he plays a hitman?
Yeah.
Yeah, that movie sucked. Mm-hmm. It was the worst hitman I've ever seen in my life. Did you pay any attention to the movie? He sat in a diner in front of a great big window.
Yeah.
Like every 20 minutes with this hooker. You don't do that when you're a hitman. You sit in the corner, Bob.
It's transparency. It's transparency for the people who want to know where our spies are so we can talk about them on the internet and tell everybody where our spies are.
Glenn Greenwald will launch a website of, you know, outing every CIA agent in the Middle East now.
Does that guy have any credibility left anymore at all? I mean, does anyone really pay attention to what he has to say? Yeah. I mean, it's at the point now where it's just getting – he's becoming self-satirical.
Yeah, he hashtagged something the other day that was just so ridiculous. The hashtag itself was just this little microcosm of his just his angsty shtick, and I thought, I can't let that hashtag go. But then I was like, I really don't want to get in a pissing match with Glenn Greenwald. So I skipped it.
Well, he'll bite if you started ripping on him. He would take you on. That's one thing. I mean, he is a fighter. I mean, he's kind of tenacious that way. Mm. But really, obnoxious. When he really lost me. When he was referring to "quote unquote" Obama lovers, which was just so wrong in so many ways, Obama lovers. Mm-hmm. Good one, Glenn. Yeah, what the progressive movement really wants to do is alienate like all African Americans.
Right.
Good job.
Mm.
But back to Libya. I don't know if you saw this story. Talking Points memo about this guy, this Congressman Tom Marino. Mm-hmm. I mean, the Republicans really. I wrote about this in the Huffington Post this week. They just have no basis with which for anyone to take them seriously anymore.
No.
I mean, with the House Majority Leader has come up with this fictional Government Shutdown Prevention Act. Have you heard about this?
Yeah.
Basically, I mean, they're voting on it tomorrow, I believe. And basically the law says that if the Senate doesn't come up with a budget bill that they have voted on successfully by April 6th, then the bill that the Senate voted down, H.R. 1, which was the $61 billion in budget cuts, that bill just automatically becomes law. So this law, basically, the Government Shutdown Prevention Act, totally and entirely circumvents the Constitution in every way, shape, and form. How a bill becomes a law is completely blown away.
Mm-hmm.
Like this, that law, H.R. 1, becomes law. It just magically becomes law.
Yeah. It's the neener bill, basically. Is, you know?
Right.
Just the I'm rubber, you're glue bill.
Yeah.
If you don't do this and we can't settle on it, then, oh, well. Here's a bill that says it's okay. Well, I guess, you know, if it passes, then it has the full force of law, and then it can circumnavigate the Constitution. Right.
Well, what everyone knows I mean, a law has to be voted on by both chambers and then signed by the president in order to become a law. But Eric Cantor, again, House Majority Leader. He's not like Louis Gohmert or Steve King or one of these or Michelle Bachmann or any of these idiots. He's the House Majority Leader, and he's got his name on this. And the other thing is, you know, this is not the first time he's done this. I mean, it's he's already attached his name to James O'Keefe and backed the work of the scam artist. And so now this is all in keeping. And yet Eric Cantor still is considered to be one of the serious Republicans. But I guess, yeah. I guess considering the field, it's not all that shocking that maybe he's more serious than the wackaloons who comprise the Republican Party at this point.
Yeah.
So Rick Scott. Oh, wait, I don't want to get to, I don't want to jump ahead of myself. Tom Marino. This is the story I was going to talk about a second ago. Mm. Tom Marino doesn't know that,
where Libya is.
Libya is.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. What are we going to do?
Going to Africa next?
Africa. Yeah, you think?
God damn.
Dumbass.
Unbelievable. And then
that's frightening.
Right.
That's, I mean, really frightening. I mean, I'm just a medium grade wonk and I fucking know where Libya is. Somebody voted me to represent their political interests in Washington, for Christ's sake.
We have lots of this week on this week's show. Just lots of ridiculous Republican bullshit.
Wankery.
Which is kind of what we do every week, but especially so this week. I mean, Louis Gohmert, I mentioned earlier. I mean, Louis.
He looks like a fucking Gohmert.
He is totally a Gohmert.
Doesn't he? He's a Gohmert.
I mean, if you were actually personify the last name Gohmert, it would be this guy.
Yeah.
And he looks like, yeah, he does. He looks like a Gohmert.
He looks like a Gohmert.
Gohmert. He's totally Gohmert.
Yeah.
We could just turn that name or that last name into an adjective. That'd be great.
Gohmert.
Gohmert.
He's a fucking Gohmert.
He's a Gohmert.
You never go full Gohmert.
You never go full Gohmert. That's right. And so...
Texas. Fuck Texas. Fuck Texas up its stupid hillbilly ass.
Yeah, I mean, you kind of expect... For a second there, I assume Louis Gohmert was from South Carolina because they're all...
Yeah,
you'd
think.
South
or
Carolina.
Tennessee.
Yeah.
One of those... Or Mississippi. One of those fucking hillbilly... You know, I'm from Mississippi, but, you know, fuck Texas. I got to go to Texas in June. I'm not looking forward to it.
Well, so... Gohmert thinks that the military action in Libya is actually a presidential, you know, White House conspiracy to deplete the military, our military resources, so the president can then use that as an excuse to muster a private army.
What the fuck? He didn't say that in public.
Muster a private army to enforce the health care reform law.
Oh, for fuck! He did not.
Yes. Here's the quote.
Oh, Gohmert.
Gohmert. Louis Gohmert, right?
Gohmert.
I'm going to see if I can find... I want to read the full quote here, because I only have part of the quote.
Oh, my God. He did not.
Yeah.
In public, where people could hear him?
Yeah.
Oh.
It says on the floor of the House of Representatives.
Jesus Christ.
But when you find out we're being sent to Libya to use our treasure and American lives there... Maybe there's intention to so deplete the military that we're going to need that presidential reserve officer commissioned corps and non-commissioned corps that the president can call up on a moment's notice involuntarily, according to the Obamacare bill.
What?
So
there's something in Obamacare that gives
that's
him
what he's saying.
His own private army?
Yeah.
I missed that passage.
We're going to need that Presidential Reserve Officer Commissioned Corps and Non-Commissioned Corps that the president can call up on a moment's notice involuntarily according to the Obamacare bill.
So
he thinks that there's basically an army. You know, it's the big, you know, it's been debunked in 90 different ways since the healthcare reform bill was signed over a year ago.
That's the craziest thing I've ever heard.
Yeah. Talking Points memo here goes on to say, if this rings a bell, maybe you've seen a chain email peddling the second half of this conspiracy theory. Some on the far right believe the healthcare law creates a private army for President Obama to call up and train on U.S. citizens. What it really does is make good on a plan first envisioned by Bush HHS Secretary Tommy Thompson in the wake of September 11th attack to create a ready reserve corps of several thousand public health officials, nurses, doctors that can be called up to treat people in the wake of an epidemic or disaster like Hurricane Katrina.
Oh, so in other words, first responders.
Yeah.
That should have been our number one priority, but never seemed to ever happen.
Right.
Yeah. What did we need most on 9/11? What did everyone say, you know, weeks and weeks later when we finally all calmed the fuck down? Everybody said we needed better first responders. We needed fucking cops that knew how to talk to firemen on their walkie-talkies. And we infrastructure. And what do we do? None of that.
Yeah. We talked about that. We talked about this a few weeks ago. I mean, all they're doing is slashing all of those things anyway.
Right.
And they're slashing cops. They're slashing the FBI. They're cutting the hell out of all of this stuff. I mean, that's what this budget debate is all about.
Yeah.
I mean, they're cutting things that, you know, had the tables ever been turned, the Democrats would have been tarred and feathered as traitors, as unpatriotic. Yeah. Why are the Democrats with the terrorists? That would have been the line. Because all the Republicans are doing are cutting all of these programs for first responders. Mm-hmm. In this bill, in this H.R. 1 bill, which, by the way, will magically become law after tomorrow.
Except that none of this will happen because right. Eric Cantor can't just pass laws out of his asshole.
No, of course it can't happen.
Right.
But for them to believe this, along with this ridiculous conspiracy theater, just is indicative of the entire Republican establishment now.
How serious they are.
Yeah, how serious they are. How unserious
very, very
they are.
Serious.
So, I mean, wrap up this talking points memo thing. Gohmert gave credence to the theory on the House floor with an addendum. The administration's Libya operation is actually a false flag to draw down the country's military reserves and give Obama the exclusive or the excuse he needs to call up his private army.
Mm-hmm. Makes perfect sense to me.
It's like, yeah, it's on par. They call it on par with 9/11 truther stuff.
Mm.
And it was on the House floor. Again, the House floor. These guys, and this is Louis Gohmert. And he's not even a real serious Republican. He's not in any sort of particular leadership role.
He's from Texas.
Yeah. But then again, you've got the House Majority Leader wrapping his arms around James O'Keefe and introducing bills where, you know, the entire legislative process is entirely circumvented and laws just can become laws by magic.
Mm. These the same people who needed an official process for reading the Constitution against every bill, you know, to make absolutely sure.
Yeah,
we got to have a constitutional committee.
Mm-hmm.
Even though, you know, you've got that, they're called all the fucking congressional lawyers.
Right.
Monkeys. That's fine.
They
just
really
keep
are.
It up. Keep it up. Just it. Their approval ratings are just in the toilet. The Tea Party is. Just running roughshod over everything, and it's going down the tubes popularity-wise. Just let them keep doing this horse shit. People will see what utter nonsense it is,
yeah.
And it's just going to kick them in the ass.
Well, and that's the whole point. And the idea, though, is that in order for people to see it, we have to call attention to it. And so that's an important part of the process that they, you know, they're going to do these stupid things and but they're going to do them in a vacuum and get away with them unless we go, hey, wait a second.
Yeah.
That's utterly ridiculous. You can't American Family Association guy. You can't say that, you know, the First Amendment only protects Christians.
Mm.
You know, you can't say that. That's not true. That's entirely untrue.
Of course it is.
You know, and here's evidence from Thomas Jefferson and John Adams.
You know. Why would you even have to do that?
Yeah, I know. You don't.
Fucking retarded. We've got to go back and find quotes from those guys to tell you that the First Amendment isn't fucking racist?
Well, you have to, or else this guy is going to be on, you know, Dylan Radigan repeating all of it. And as if
that's
a rational side of the debate. I mean, you had today, Dylan Radigan today. Well, you know what? You know, I want to talk about soap here because then I want to get on Dylan Radigan too. Because Radigan's pissing me off. I mean, he's been pissing me off for a while. He's now he's really pissing me off. Today's show brought to you exclusively by Bubble Genius at www.bubblegenius.com. Pure products, pure genius. Bubble Genius is the best goddamn soap you'll ever try. They sent me a bunch of new soaps. I don't know if you got any new soaps lately, but I only got on my, I think, 3 bars of my favorite hibiscus soap, which not only smells fantastic, but, I mean, I don't know. It's my favorite Bubble Genius soap because it actually feels good in my hand. Like, to go and wash my hands, it almost, like, massages my hands. It sounds kind of creepy, doesn't it? But it does. It's true. it's good soap. And then they sent me their lawn gnome soap on a rope.
Oh. So. I got a Buddha.
Oh, you got soap. A Buddha? I would imagine that'd be kind of nice to rub your hands over that Buddha.
It's lovely.
Yeah. And then the, but I mean, this gnome, this lawn gnome soap, it's gigantic. I mean, it's literally like the size of my fist. And I can't imagine. It's amazing how detailed it is.
Yeah.
And they go through
great mold work.
Yeah, great mold work.
Molds.
And once you start using the soap, it's going to, I mean, the gnome soap will probably last you like a year. Yeah. It's really just like a giant hunk of soap. Shaped
we
like
go through
gnome.
A lot of soap on the Pharmadome, so.
I imagine so.
I mean, really a lot.
And here's the new commercial from Bubble Genius.
Did you know it's Alcohol Awareness Month? I mean, I, for one, am plenty aware of alcohol. So I'm not even sure there needs to be a whole month for alcohol awareness, does there?
These guys Bubble Genius.
The soap guys?
Yeah, those soap guys. Making soap shots. Like margaritas and...
What? That sounds really delicious. And so, what do you say maybe we go get one of those soaps instead of maybe another shot?
Well, let's have another shot first.
All right, then some soap. We're so aware of alcohol.
I'm aware.
Celebrate Alcohol Awareness Month with Bubble Genius. Our Cheers soap shots smell like the real thing, but you won't get a DUI driving to work in the morning.
Buy our stuff!
Bubble Genius.
Shove Bob and Elvis into your pants and haul them around with you wherever you go.
Drinking.
Subscribe to the Bob and Elvis Show in the podcast section on iTunes.
Are you, you drinking yet?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Good for you.
Yeah, you know, my certain life events and, you know, Farm of Doom activities just aren't synonymous, aren't possible with sobriety. So you kind of have to. I figure once I move to Iowa and I get the Farm of Doom behind me, I'm planning on doing a whole range of purgings and fixings. But right now, yeah. Yeah, got a nice heavy-bottomed bottle of Maker's Mark 46 right here.
Nice. He's back.
I'm back, baby.
Where's he back? He's back with Maker's Mark.
Yeah, it's months ago I asked the dear cherubic, lovely woman who looked like she could kick my ass in 12 different ways, who runs my local Mayberry liquor store, if she might, you know, if it wouldn't killer to stock Maker's Mark 46. And 7 years ago I had to ask her to stock Maker's Mark. So and then suddenly they come out with this new this new blend, this 46. So I said, you know, months ago when I was drinking, and then before I gave it up, I said, could you get some of this 46 in? And she's like, oh yeah, I'll get it, you know, next week. And weeks and weeks and weeks go by, no 46. And, you know, I'm out in the middle of nowhere, so if my local place doesn't stock it, I'm really fairly fucked. I have to go all the way to Omaha, and there's like a Sam's Club that's got it. And it's just a fine product, this 46. Oh, my God. But I can't be asked in the middle of the night, you know, at 10 o'clock at night to go all the way to Omaha to Sam's Club. So then I thought, you know, I'm on the wagon, and I'm all dried out, and I'm all fine, everything's good, and my liver's functioning again, the kidneys are working. And then I go in there for a bottle of wine for something else, and oh my God, now they've got the
force. There it is.
So what am I going to do? And it's like $32 a bottle. And I mean, so I really, the one good thing is, I am drinking, but I'm really sipping now. I'm not like going through the bartender's bottle every two nights like I was doing. Because this 46 is too pricey at $32 a bottle, and it's a much smaller bottle than normal. So I really got to go easy on it. So what I do, so I have a whole thing. So about 6 o'clock, I start hydrating, you know, get the hydration going. And then I don't eat anything after about 6:45. So I've got a really empty system so that just a very little bit accomplishes the kind of, you know, drunkenness that I need.
Nice.
That's really probably – I've really probably got a problem. I just said that out loud.
Yeah.
I just said that I do like a whole pre-drunk fitness prep. That's probably really bad.
Yeah, I think so.
That I do a lot of prep work to get my drunk on.
Yeah, I thought you were going to say when you – and you saw the Maker's Mark 46 there that you were just going to throw your head back and just – chug it right there in the store. Just, you know,
well, you know, it's hard to get into a bottle of Maker's because it's wax sealed.
Yeah, that's right.
So this woman who runs the place could jump me by the time I got the – but it's got a cork instead of a screw top. Oh, it's lovely. The bottles themselves are works of art. They're smooth and contoured and heavy-bottomed. Oh, even I feel bad throwing the bottles away. But you know what I do with the wax? I strip all the wax off of every bottle, and then I melt it down, and I make these wax caps that I melt onto letters like they used to do in the old days.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Seals, and I've got a little thing with a decorative E on it for Elvis, and I just stamp it, and then I send letters out like that. That's extremely gay. That's probably the gayest thing
That might be the gayest thing you do.
Be the gayest thing you've ever heard, is that I handwrite letters on fine crane stationery with an extraordinarily expensive fountain pen, mm-hmm. Literally a $2,500 fountain pen. It's collector's edition, gorgeous Visconti fountain pen. I write them. I type it out first on a word processor, so I know what I'm saying, because you can't waste this paper or this ink. The ink's like $70. And then so I get it what I want to say, and then I do some calisthenics so that I'm ready, and then I very carefully hand print my letters, and then I've got a little folding table. I fold it. I got a little stamper thing that dries the ink, and then I put them in an envelope, and then I seal it with wax and stamp it, and then I take that and then I package it in like crush proof packaging, and then I mail it as a box.
And I'm sure your life partner appreciates every second you take on his
loves life. It. He just stands over my shoulder and coos in my ear and applauds me. And then we have outrageous man sex.
Well, see, now, what I was thinking, though,
in the bad place
is that, you know, I don't think you and I have actually coordinated our drinking, because when I was like heavily drinking, and I spent a considerable part of last summer and the early part of the fall just drunk. Yeah.
Yeah.
And good. But you had quit. And so,
yeah.
Right. And so then I
you're
stopped
not drinking.
No, I stopped drinking back in maybe October. Like it was like mid October ish. It was getting to the point that had I not quit, I think by now we're at the end of March, beginning of April, I would have been full blown alcoholic.
Yeah.
Easily.
See, the only thing that makes it easy for me, and we've talked about this before, but is that my drinking isn't other than financially, it's extremely consequence free. I never get with bourbon, at least with bourbon and with vodka. I absolutely never ever get hungover. Mm-hmm. I'm hangover proof, and I can get fucked up drunk, like falling over, staggering into walls drunk, and next morning I'm ready to roll, 6 a.m. Yep. I'm fine. And that makes it – that's problematic. If there were more consequences, and hopefully my body will just eventually cave in or quit, or I'll be on dialysis or something. But until there's consequence, it's just really easy to get, you know, to get fucked up. And that's a that's probably bad that, you know, I really – enjoy my bourbon. I just really enjoy it. It's a ritual for me.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's all bad. And, you know, I didn't want to qualify too that I wasn't just wandering around all day with just a bottle and a paper bag.
No, no.
Like a wino. I mean, it was me. Like the end of the day, everything could be done. I'd be done with all of my work, and I'd be done with all serious things.
Yeah.
And then I would have a few glasses of wine. Yeah. And by about and being sort of a thinner guy, maybe the third glass of wine, that's enough. I mean, that's by that point, after a third glass of Yellowtail, that was I was pretty much like feeling
just nicely
feeling good.
Baked up and buzzed.
That's exactly right.
Yeah. Yeah, well, me too. I mean, I always make sure Peanut's in bed and, or, you know, that I got nothing going on. It's just me. I'm alone, and I can watch TV or write or read or whatever, and just, you know, a little sipping whiskey, a little sipping bourbon there.
Yeah.
And then, you know, but I drink it neat, no ice, no water. You know, start with three fingers and I'll have like three of those. And, you know, by the end of that cycle, you're pretty well liquored up.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, let me tell you the worst drunk I ever had, me and a buddy, and this is also a very gay thing, but before I moved here, when I lived in DC, me and a friend
were out buying stationery.
Yeah, we were. Yeah, we may have been, but we got this Jones on about absinthe, and I don't know how it got started. Yeah. I think some movie had come out, maybe From Hell, that Hughes Brothers movie with Johnny Depp. There was something just going around. It had become viral or meme-ish to have absinthe, and you can't buy it in America. It's illegal in America, in the United States, but you can import it. I guess, I mean, because I did, but you can buy it in France or in Europe in places over the interwebs, and they'll ship it to you. And we thought that'd be really, because, you know absinthe, right? It's got wormwood.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's green, the green fairy, they call it.
It's like Buzz's, our announcer Buzz, it's his favorite drink in the world.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But, I mean, you have to drink like a fucking teaspoon of this stuff, because it will destroy you. I mean, there's a whole ritual to it. Yeah. I bought a spoon. You know, you got to get this slotted spoon. So I got this really fancy one. And you put a sugar cube on it and you soak it. So you soak the sugar cube in the absinthe. You put that on the spoon, which is resting above a glass with water in it. And you pour the absinthe, which is green and god awful smelling. It's like got a really licorice kind of a smell. And so you light it on fire. And then you pour it, and it does this – I think it's called the louche or something. There's a whole word for it. There's a whole fucking – talk about ritual. There's a whole ritual to this. So what me and my buddy did, it was just the two of us. It was a guy's night out. Everybody was gone, and it was just the two of us. So we go to Whole Foods, and we buy all these fancy pants, you know, French style, which is the worst thing in the world. I mean, like high fat, like fucking pate and stuff like that. Just the worst thing to do if you're going to get massively, monstrously fucked up on a completely alien beverage, right? So we bought all this really rich, fatty, high, faggy food. It's just really bad for us. And ate that, and then we drank. Between the two of us, we put down an entire bottle of absinthe. And mean to God, I almost died. I almost aspirated. He had to come in and knock me over because of vomiting on myself.
Holy shit.
While I was on my back. I mean, I almost did like a Sid Vicious. So I almost just died from vomit. And it was the worst. I've never been so – I was hungover for like 8 days. I felt like complete shit for a week after that. So don't ever, ever drink absinthe.
Yeah, stay away from absinthe, kids.
Oh, it was just the worst. And there was no wormwood delusions. Like you're supposed to get like – fucked up so bad that you're seeing things and hallucinating because of the wormwood in it. And no, that didn't. I just got galactically drunk and almost died.
Right.
And was hungover forever. I think I may still have a little of that 8 years later.
You still have some of that hangover lingering?
Well, you know, I had there was maybe 2 or 3 inches of 2 or 3 fingers of absinthe left. And it sat on that shelf for fucking years. My brother-in-law says, "What's this?" I'm like, "Oh, that's absinthe. Knock yourself out." Because he's the one that ruined tequila for me. I can't fucking even smell tequila now. Because I went head-to-head with him and just got punished.
Yeah. See, now, that's when I would get – that's when I would go a little too far. This is even this past year. I mean, in 2010. Yeah. And it was on treat day. I would even say, "Hey, look, it's Saturday. It's treat day." And then then it was nothing but this, just drinking down
out of a dog bowl.
That's exactly
no,
right.
That's why I haven't tried that.
It's just face down in a dog bowl filled with you know, red wine, and it was great. And you know, but it was enough is enough. And it's not like I'll still have an occasional drink. I think I maybe had two, maybe beers since then. It's not like I swore off booze forever.
No, just
but it was just, you know, it's just like, okay, enough is enough. You know, I know, yeah, life is stressful, but I don't need to be doing this. It's not going to lead anywhere good.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's why I come back.
Like I said, when I shed the Farm of Doom and I no longer have to like today. Just I had to go separate my dog from chasing a baby deer up the hill. I mean, that's just not a normal daily problem most people have. Their dogs running wild up the hill chasing a deer. You know, and it's just stress. It's just, oh, God, I got to go deal with this fucking dog chasing this deer. Because the deer, if they get cornered or whatever, they just stomp the shit out of that dog. She's stupider than hell. So it's just stress. It's just the whole stress of the Farm of Doom. I just keep praying for a twister to come and take it off the foundation. Just not that lucky. God, that'd be awesome. Just a big fat insurance check. Hand it right to the bank. Tell the whole town that go fuck itself.
So long, suckers.
And so long, suckers.
Just peel off in a big dust cloud and
light the bridge on fire behind me. Literally burn the bridge down.
So, so Dylan Radigan, back to things here. Dylan Radigan, today called T. Boone Pickens, with a straight face, called T. Boone Pickens a patriot. T. Boone Pickens.
The energy guy?
T. Boone Pickens, who financed the Swift Boat veterans.
Oh, did he?
Yes.
Yeah. I guess he did.
T. Boone Pickens is a far-right businessman, far-right billionaire, who financed the Swift Boat veterans for bullshit. Mm-hmm. And as we all know, and Dylan Radigan clearly does not know, they smeared John Kerry, a decorated war hero, by just making shit up.
That probably the Swift Boat thing. I mean, that was such a close. That probably literally cost him the election.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
Outside of Ohio being probably definitely tampered with. I mean, I'm not a conspiracy. You know me in conspiracy theory. I don't believe in them at all. But I think Ohio was thrown on criminally, and the Swift Boats probably cost carry the election.
Yeah. I mean, it was a combination of those two things, because what happened was, I mean, he was a victim of a vicious smear campaign, unlike anything we'd seen since perhaps Dukakis.
Yeah.
But and the problem was, is it was a perfect storm between that and the fact that his campaign was being run by old school Democrats like Bob Schrum,
who did the worst goddamn campaign in history.
Exactly. They just did
worst
not
ever.
They didn't know how to respond to something like that. Yeah. So they just let it happen.
Yeah.
You know,
he should have come out just swinging the fuck. I mean, it goes back to Gore, too. I mean, Gore ran a pretty pitiful campaign. He just kept taking the punches and just kept letting the media lie on him. There's never been a politician that the media could just lie on about like Gore, and he just take it up the ass. It made me so angry. It's like, why don't you just come out and say, yeah, bitches, I invented the internet. Suck my dick. I invented the internet. Kiss my ass. Yeah. I just did not understand how he could roll over the way he did. And I'm so glad that there's this new paradigm, this new sort of Obama style. I mean, because he just set the stage. He just set that. And that's why I'm so confident in a 2012 win re-election, is that there's just nobody on the Republican side doing that.
No.
They're not. I mean, we don't even know who the candidate is going to be. There's nobody that's going to spool up an operation that can begin to compete with a second run at an Obama campaign.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah. Well, that's exactly why. First of all, AP, Associated Press, did a poll, a presidential approval poll. 53% approval.
Yeah.
For the president right now. 53%. That's almost insurmountable. If we were looking at April of 2012, if this was a year from now, if the president's able to hold on to this kind of approval number, he's unbeatable. Short of some sort of crazy scandal or some other unforeseen event.
9/11.
Yeah. He would, he's easily going to be reelected. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you only need to be in the, I mean, he's 10, 12 points above the curve right now.
Right.
But I mean, that's just one poll, and it's, I don't think it's an amalgam, and it hasn't been adjusted or anything. It's still a very high number.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, I voted for Kerry holding my fucking nose. I was just so disgusted with him as a candidate and with the campaign he ran. But fuck, if I was going to vote for George Bush again.
Well, that was just it. I'll never forget that night, that election night, 2004, was just utterly crushing. Yeah, that was one of the worst nights that I can recall following politics.
Yeah, he won, and Bush won by, what, 3%, and he called that a mandate.
Mandate, yeah.
Oh, I got a mandate. Oh, really, 3%? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Go knock him out, George.
Right.
And then what was his mandate? Two wars running. Let's carve up Social Security. Woo! Biggest fail whale in the world. Yeah. Fuck that guy. Yeah. But Kerry just made me want to vomit.
Yeah. It's just when he got up there, when he did his acceptance speech at the Democratic National Convention, and he said, I'm John Kerry reporting for duty. And it's just like, oh, fucking hell. Barf. Really? Do you really have to do that? We know. Yeah. Just cover
plus,
that in your.
Who's the audience? What is the audience for that? For that?
Yeah.
Oh my God! So completely ass backwards. Mm-hmm. This is not 1984. You know, it's we kind of want to distance ourselves from the fact that you were in Southeast Asia killing brown people. You know, we sort of not want to talk about that in 2004.
Well, either talk, but if you're going to talk about that, go on the attack.
Yeah,
counterattack these chicken hawks who were running this ridiculous campaign against you.
Yeah,
don't just sit there and take it and then say I'm reporting for duty. Hey, what? Okay, duty. Sure. Fight the good fight then.
Duty.
Win this campaign for America, please.
Yeah,
get rid of this guy for us. Thank you.
I can't remember. I mean, that was just such a black time for America. Yeah. It was just such a horrible. That Bush got reelected is just absolute crime against humanity.
Yeah, I mean, I just remember sitting in my garage at the time, just sitting in this chair, this folding lawn chair in my garage,
sobbing.
Just head in hand, sobbing, just like, what the fuck? Four more years of this guy?
Squinty McPeance Friance?
Squinty, yeah. McPeance Friance.
What a just a fucking douche. I wish we'd been doing this show back then when we really had something to fucking talk about.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Just to rail against in government.
Right.
I mean, now we got plenty of Republicans though, but Jesus, what a just a train wreck he was.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we do have it's less centralized, but we do have a lot of Republican idiocy to talk about. For example, Governor Rick Scott of Florida.
Oh my God.
He's planning to attend a torch running ceremony today. For special, he attended it today for the Special Olympics. But prior to going to this big Special Olympics event, Rick Scott invoked his emergency powers to impose a 15% cut to the rates charged by group home workers and caseworkers that help the 30,000 Floridians with cerebral palsy, autism, and Down syndrome.
That's just awesome. What a badass.
I mean, this guy goes to a Special Olympics event, and just before that, he cuts their budget, basically. He cuts the budget to workers who help out 30,000, you know, mentally challenged Floridians.
It's like, you know, it'd been better if he'd just gone and, like, he had his staffers take all the lug nuts off the wheelchair wheels. So when the kids come out in their little wheelchairs, all the wheels fall off and they just all fall out onto the tarmac and he can point and laugh. I mean, why not just do that?
Yeah.
Why not just go all the way? Take their little wheelchairs apart.
Yeah.
You know, fucking heartless, sick, twisted douchebags.
Just run up and blow out the torch right before they light it. Why don't you do that?
Piss on it.
Just right. Yeah. There's a big, again, like a fire extinguisher and just blast the guy running up the final few steps, you know.
Yeah.
Just like maybe he's got a prosthetic leg or something and he's making up those final steps to light the giant torch and Rick Scott runs up with a fire extinguisher and blasts it away and then laughs and goes, ha ha! And then tears off, you know.
Like Rip Taylor.
Suckers, yeah. Runs off, right?
Throws a big handful of confetti.
Exactly.
Woohoo! Budget cuts, bitches.
Scott says the cuts are necessary to address a $170 million deficit in the Agency for Persons with Disabilities. But at the same time, he's also proposing $1.5 billion in corporate tax cuts and $1.4 billion in property tax cuts.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and boy, this is now in this education day and age is when you need to be cutting those property taxes, man. Don't need schools, don't need teachers.
I mean, it's not hard.
Florida's got the worst goddamn schools. I went to school in Tampa, Florida, Hillsborough County for 3 years, and oh my God, I barely got out of there alive.
Really?
I went to the school, you know, remember that really hot blonde in Tampa that was banging her students in the car or whatever? I went to that school.
Yeah.
Greco High School. Fuck Florida schools. So I went from that. I went from Hillsborough County, one of the worst, like, demilitarized zone school system ever, into the Fairfax County school system. Had to start everything over again.
Yeah.
Had to start French over again. Like, I was in French 2 in Florida. So I wanted to start French 3 in Fairfax County. I had to go back to French 1. Oh. It was brutal. It was like I just literally had to start all over again.
Well, yeah. I mean, I don't know why anyone moves to Florida. Like, sometimes we'll watch House Hunters or one of these shows on HGTV, and they'll have a couple that's, we're moving to Florida because it's so awesome. Well, what the fuck is your problem? Florida is a police state. Florida is a sewer.
It is. It's a
really
sewer.
Like, one of the worst places to live. I mean, once you even get beyond the awful, awful climate, the actual, I mean, the police can get away with anything down there, first of all. It's just like a right-wing paradise. It's like a far-right conservative paradise in Florida.
Yeah.
And it always will be.
And my mother lives there.
Yeah. Well, lots of seniors do.
Yes.
Lots of seniors do.
Yeah. It's lovely to visit, go and walk around the beaches and go ooh-ah, but I would never, ever, ever live there.
Yeah. No, it's terrible.
Again.
But anyway, so Rick Scott is just yet another in a long line of these ridiculous Republicans who somehow are still given the benefit of the doubt, the both sides meme and all that shit.
Yeah.
And I just don't get it. And then you have this week, it was just yesterday, in fact, there was this leak that the Democrats have reached an agreement with the congressional Republicans about this budget battle, and they've settled on a budget cut number of $33 billion. So they're still cutting the budget. You know, I've been watching cable news, as I do every goddamn day. It makes my head hurt and my eyes bleed, but I do. And I still see Democrats on there going, yeah, we can't be doing all this cutting, but we know we have to address the deficit. We know we have to cut the deficit. No, why? No, I don't. What?
Yeah.
It doesn't make any sense to me. No one has been able to prove to me or to indicate in any way, shape, or form why we need to cut the deficit. Why now? Why do we have to do it now when growth is still slow, where unemployment is still high?
Yeah.
And where there's still a mortgage crisis in America, where there's still a jobs crisis.
Nowhere in any of this is anyone talking about raising taxes. Nowhere.
Yeah. No,
you never hear that. It's just all about cuts. It's like no one on TV is talking about raising taxes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you got to get blood flowing in the system. I mean, we just got to get to 2012, and then it's just going to be all bets are off. I promise you.
I hope so.
This president as a second termer is just going to knock the fucking building down.
Oh, shit. You know what I just see here? On the Huffington Post, there's a big headline, Sbarro prepares to file for bankruptcy. Sbarro.
Oh. The pizza Sbarro, place?
Yeah,
how could Sbarro. They file for bankruptcy? They charge you $8 for a slice of pizza.
They're in every food court in the world.
Yeah. The fuck am I going to do for pizza at the food court now?
What are you going to do at every Jersey Turnpike rest area?
Yeah, that's right. Sometimes there's Roy Rogers in there.
Roy Rogers. And I didn't even know this still existed. But you can still go to a Jersey Turnpike rest area and get a double R bar burger.
God damn, I love those. With the ham.
It's the ham.
Oh, my God. Yeah. I remember. You probably do, too. I remember when Roy Rogers first descended on Northern Virginia.
Yeah.
It was the biggest thing ever. They had the Fixin' Bar.
Yeah. Right over there in Fairfax. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Right on
right
the
right across from right Fair City
the,
Mall.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. Oh, my God. I went there all the time.
Yeah.
Fixin's Bar was just a revelation. Oh, my really God. You mean I can put as many pickles on my burger as I want?
Yep.
Holy shitballs.
That's right. And it had the, Roy Rogers had that special barbecue sauce.
Yeah. Yep. I can't remember what it was, Roy's sauce or Trigger sauce or something.
Yeah, something ridiculous.
Good,
it was basically barbecue sauce.
Yeah, but it had a little zip in it. Probably had a little horseradish or something in it, but it was good.
And they had Pappy Parker fried chicken at Roy Rogers.
Yeah, that's right. That chicken was good.
Yeah, it was good.
That Roy Rogers chicken was fucking good.
Pappy Parker.
Yeah, I remember that. My dad would always get that chicken. It was really good chicken.
Yeah. And that was my favorite thing in the world. My family, we rarely ate at McDonald's. We hardly ever went to McDonald's as a kid. We always went to either Roy Rogers, where I would always get the double R bar burger.
Me too.
With the Fixin's bar, right? Or we would go to, and maybe you remember this from Northern Virginia, but Geno's. Remember Geno's?
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah, they had the knockoff Big Mac called the Geno's Giant.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Place was great.
It was great.
Burger Chef when I was really...
Burger Chef, yeah.
You remember Burger Chef?
I do, yeah.
They invented the Happy Meal. The Burger Chef invented the Happy Meal with the toy, with the box and the toy and everything. McDonald's completely ripped that the fuck off with Burger Chef.
Yeah. There was a Burger Chef over in Springfield.
Burger Chef and Jeff. Yeah. Yep. My dad would take me every Saturday. We go to Burger Chef and we go to a movie.
Oh, man, it's making me hungry.
I know, me too.
Double R bar burger. I can still taste the ham in that sandwich.
It was a great burger. It was a fucking burger with a slab of ham on it. And, oh, it was good. That's a good burger.
Sbarro's going out of business.
I can't comprehend that. Yeah. I've never been in a food court where the line at Sbarro's wasn't one of the longest.
Yeah.
In the place, and that's fairly decent food for food court stuff.
Yeah,
and the pizza is usually it's how I like pizza, like New York style. It's like greasy slab, just this giant, as big as your head slab.
Yeah.
Of greasy hot pizza. It's just good, and you could get a little side salad, but really, fucking expensive. So maybe they're going tits up because people aren't buying $8 slices in the recession.
Not yet. Another tragedy from the Great Recession. No, the recovery. I just say make clear that we're in a recovery. There's a slow growth recovery, and they're fucking with federal spending, and it can't because no one is buying anything. People still aren't buying shit. And when people aren't buying shit, the government. Yeah, that's right. Neither am I. We're both significantly downsizing our shit.
Yes, we are. Yeah.
So we're not about to go buy more shit.
I tell you, every morning I get up now and I log into my bank account and just stare at it and smile. Just loving that it's just, you know, starting to fill up with fucking money.
Yeah.
I'm loving that. That's all I want is nest egg security.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the places I'm looking at in Iowa, by the time I get there, if all goes well, I'm going to have 6 months of rent in the bank. You know, that big of a, I mean, and that probably sounds retarded to, you know, normal financially smart people. You know, Jesus, nothing to be happy about. But for me, that's that's unbelievable.
Yeah.
Security. You know, when your fucking mortgage is $3,100 a month. You know, fuck that. Yeah. Ugh. Poor Sbarro's.
Well, and then, you know, Robert Reich had a great piece in the Huffington Post this week, and he's dead on about this. I mean, all of this budget-cutting talk is only going to lead us into a double dip, because it's happened before. This is not like – we're not pulling this out of our asses. This has happened before. It happened in 1937. They started cutting the budget, and they started slowing, easing back on spending, and it negatively impacted the recovery from the Great Depression.
FDR was not – he was not a big fan of all this government spending. He was quite worried about it, really. And he started to pull the brakes in, started to slow it down and reversed a bunch of stuff and cut a bunch of programs and got this balanced budget bug up his ass. And you can just look at the chart. It's, GDP, GDP, right in the fucking toilet when he tried to balance the budget.
And so Reich says that the Labor Department reported that there were only a measly, 41,000 net new jobs in March. But at least 100,000 new jobs are needed every month to just keep up with population growth. He says, in other words, the labor market continues to deteriorate. The average length of unemployment continues to rise, now up to 34.4 weeks, up from 33 weeks in April. That's another record. Now, wait a minute. What is this? This is actually... Yeah, this would be a story from a year ago. There's another Robert Reich. Yeah, there's another Robert Reich piece that I meant to reference that also has information about a double dip. Yeah. So, I mean, you know, there's a good lesson here in that Robert Reich has been saying there's going to be a double dip for the last year.
Mm-hmm. What needs to happen is these corporations that are having fucking record months and years and quarters, I mean, literally record profits. They need to start hiring some motherfuckers.
Yeah.
I don't understand. where's all this money going? It's just shareholders. And don't give me R&D. Mm-hmm. My ass. Start hiring people here in this country. Fuckers.
Okay, here it is. Here's the correct article. You Robert Reich with your similar themes. Consumers are 70% of the American economy, and consumer confidence is plummeting. It's weaker today on average than at the lowest point of the Great Recession. That's bad. The Reuters University of Michigan survey shows a 10-point decline in March, the 10th largest drop on record. Part of that drop is attributable to rising fuel and food prices. A separate Conference Board's index of consumer confidence just released shows consumer confidence at a 5-month low, and a large part is due to expectations of fewer jobs and lower wages in the months ahead. Pessimistic consumers buy less, and fewer sales spells economic trouble ahead. So if people are going to stop spending or slow their spending, that's not the time. The government does not behave like people do. No. We don't all sit around tightening our belts.
Or like businesses do. Yeah. More importantly, like businesses do. No business on earth can run the way the government can in a crisis. So that's the more important analogy. Is it should not be run like a business.
Yeah.
That's what Trump and all those douchebags, oh, yeah, I'll get in there and I'll run it like a business. No, don't.
Right.
We've seen how that's worked out. Don't do that. Run it like a fucking government. Print money.
I mean, whenever the president says the American people are tightening their belts, families are tightening their belts, so the government should too, that is so
insane.
Wrong. I mean,
yeah.
And the entire there's a huge thesis in this. And that, look who we're playing follow the leader with. These unserious dipshits.
Yeah.
You know, who cut, you know, spending on mentally challenged people while going to the Special Olympics for a torch lighting ceremony. These people, Louis Gohmert, thinking that, you know, there's a conspiracy to raise an army to enforce the healthcare reform law. Gohmert. Eric Cantor thinking, or did I say Gohmert or Gohmert?
Gohmert. I just like to say Gohmert.
Gohmert. And the House Majority Leader trying to pass legislation that automatically makes things into law, completely circumventing the Senate and the White House.
Yeah. These are the ass clowns that we're worried about.
That we're concerned about
offending or that whose leadership we should take seriously.
Who were meeting halfway on their budget cuts.
My ass.
It'd be 33, as he takes a drink, $33 billion instead of $61 billion.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it ought to be an increase of $61 billion.
Yeah.
You know.
Stimulus part two.
Yeah. Which is, you know, I think this is one thing that no one's really talking about because it's almost verboten to say it, but you know, let's face it, military action is stimulus.
But it's not anymore. It was in World War II. It just created the military industrial complex, really, in World War II. It's just not. No one's like, woohoo, war, let's get some jobs going. It's like, no, it's like this, you know, maybe now Lockheed Martin doesn't have to lay off 12 people that screw the explodey parts into bombs. You know, it's like it just doesn't feel stimulative anymore. I just don't think it is.
Yeah. Well,
it just stimulates itself. I mean, war is just only good for propagating itself. I mean, that's it. The military industrial complex is going to build that shit anyway. We got the biggest defense budget ever under this president. I don't get that. That's the thing. What's his face? Grover Norquist. You know, you got to starve the beast. You got to drown it in the bathtub, whatever. You got to starve it. That's what we need to starve. If we starve the Defense Department, we can't do these bullshit wars anymore.
Yeah.
We just don't have it. That's what I want to be pre-World War II again, where we just didn't have that shit. It's like, love to help you, but we ain't got shit. we don't have an Air Force or, you know, the Navy.
Yeah, what do we do? We're in the midst of the Great Depression. And suddenly government starts spending big time. I mean, there was a lot of spending in the first place through the New Deal. But then we ramped up this gigantic war machine in a matter of months. And we're able to, you know, convert all of these factories into making bombs and making military vehicles and all of that stuff. And what happened to the economy? The economy recovered and was completely, entirely robust.
Yeah. Yeah. But when you talk to a Republican about that, they're like, well, that was the war. It's like, right. Who do you think paid for that, you
it's
dick?
All stimulus. It's stimulus. It's all
stimulus. Yeah. It just had a point. That's what people can't understand now. If we had this massive stimulus project to, I don't know, repave every road in the country, you know, there would be a point to that. But if you know, you'd have to line every road in the country with Hitler. You know, just, there'd be Hitlers everywhere, and you had to pave over them for there to be a point to it. It's still stimulus. It's still the same. It's government spending money to make jobs. Yeah. And then once you get the engine going again, then, you know, then everybody has confidence. The banks have confidence in the interest rates, and every, you know, it all boils up from that. Isn't it? Trickle down my ass. Boil up.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You fuckers. Somebody go dig Keynes out of his grave and reanimate him.
So Reich continues.
Zombie Keynes is what we need. Yeah. Zombie Keynesians.
Please.
Yes.
Please. I mean, it's basic grade school level economics. When families aren't spending, the government is in a unique position and has a responsibility to spend, to keep the economy going. If everyone stops spending, what happens to the economy? Let's all stop spending. I'm going to stop spending. Government's going to stop spending. President Obama's going to tighten his belts just like you and I are tightening our belts. And where is that going to get us? In a slow growth recovery. Reich continues here, but isn't the economy growing again by an estimated 2.5 to 2.9% this year? Yes, but that's even less than peanuts. The deeper the economic hole, the faster the growth needed to get back on track. By this point in the so-called recovery, we'd expect growth of 4 to 6%. Consider back in 1934, when it was emerging from the deepest hole in the Great Depression, the economy grew at 7.7%. The next year, it grew over 8%. In 1936, it grew by a whopping 14.1%. Add two other ominous signs. Real hourly wages continue to fall and housing prices continue to drop. Hourly wages are falling because with unemployment so high, most people have no bargaining power and will take whatever they can get. That is absolutely true. Yeah. Housing is dropping because of the ever larger number of homes people have walked away from because they can't pay. Because they can't pay their mortgages. But because homes are the biggest asset most Americans own, as home prices drop, most Americans feel even poorer.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we're coming out of this 20-year run of equity was the king. Equity. You got to have equity. Oh, and then you get an equity loan, and then you get a home mortgage equity line of credit, and you spend that, and then you refinance again. That it's just all insanity.
Yeah.
We've said this before over and over again in the show. We need a massive reset button on how we think about wealth and equity and you know, investments and everything else. We've got to decouple from these bullshit bubbles that never made any sense in the first place.
Right.
And I was shocked at what I did sell my house in Sterling, Virginia. This one level rambler, this cement slab, and was just mortified. Even though I'm laughing all the way to the bank with my massive, almost double, more than double profit on this fucking place, could not believe that anybody would pay that much for that house.
Yeah.
And you can't tell me that the banks and the underwriters and everybody else weren't going, what the fuck are we doing here?
Yeah.
We really just gave that guy a loan for that house for that much? What? Seriously, somebody had to know. If I am the least financially savvy person on earth, I mean, I am the galactic suck at that. And if I'm sitting there at my closing when this, and it was a very lovely Hispanic couple, because frankly, that neighborhood was going that way. It was an older neighborhood, 60s and 70s style neighborhood, and it was just filling up with, I mean, there were very small single family homes, but they were just being packed with multiple family Hispanics. It was just the creep, you know, it was just happening in that neighborhood. They were just filling in, and that's what happens. I mean, more power to them. That's great. And it was a lovely couple, but I just wanted to look them in the face and say, what in the fuck are you doing paying $300,000+ for this house?
Yeah.
I don't understand. What are you doing? And who are the people that are underwriting that loan for that house?
Have you looked it up on house values?
You know, I haven't. I should.
Yeah, go to Yahoo Real Estate and look up your address, your old address.
Yahoo Real Estate?
Yahoo Real Estate, yeah. And it'll give you like comps, like a range of comps from a couple of different, you know, real estate value websites. And then it'll give you sort of an average of what that house is worth.
Huh.
That's been scaring the piss out of me for about the house that I'm trying to unload now.
Oh, see, I better not do it on my on the Farm of Doom.
You should.
I don't want to. You're sorry. One, two, three. Huh. It didn't have my city instead. Oh, see.
Yeah.
I seriously do not want to do that on the Farm of Doom.
Well, look up your old house while I talk about some soap here.
Talk about soap.
Show today brought to you by Bubble Genius, www, full stop, Bubble Genius, full stop, com. Best goddamn soap in the world. It really is. I mean, not only is it handmade, it's also vegan. I'll talk about that in a little bit. It's Alcohol Awareness Month. National Alcohol Awareness Month. That's all April. That's starting tomorrow. They have their, at Bubble Genius, they have their Cheers soap shots, margarita, tequila sunrise, and white Russian suds available. White Russian for the dude. By the way, after I saw The Big Lebowski, I drank White Russians for a considerable period of time.
Oh, me too. Yeah. Just to be like the dude.
That's right. And I had a goatee and a mustache at the time, so I was constantly like smacking it off of my beard hair.
You had a goatee once? I did too.
Yeah.
You've seen the pictures of me with a goatee.
It was awful. It was like an awful.
Yeah, I was the worst goddamn goatee in the world.
Yeah, yeah. It's just I was not really. I had a goatee like 10 years, for God's sake.
Yeah, I had it. Yeah, I did too. 10 years. And when I shaved it off the first time, Peanut had never ever seen me with a goatee without it since her birth, and she wept. She cried. Scared the shit out of her. So I had to grow it back really quick until she grew up a little bit more.
And now I am utterly clean shaven. I mean, I'm so smoothly shaven. It's unbelievable. I spend maybe 20 minutes a day shaving my face.
Yeah, but you got Italian blood, so you got 5 o'clock shadow at like noon.
Yeah, that's the problem. Like I've got like my face feels like sandpaper like 3 hours later.
Yeah, not me.
It's Spencer Tracy's birthday on April 5th, and since he's one of Bubble Genius's favorite actors, and since Inherent the Wind is still so painfully relevant in the 21st century, they're putting all their monkey soaps on sale for the entire month of April. So say thanks to Spence for portraying Clarence Darrow so delightfully.
Huzzah. Hey, your brother's following me on Twitter, by the way.
Oh, that's great. Is that brand new?
Is your brother's name Jim?
Jim, yes. He loves the show.
Oh, good. Hi, Jim.
He's a huge, huge...
I just checked my BlackBerry, and he's following me and 4 other people he's following, and you.
Big, big Elvis fan, he is.
Hi, Jim.
So go and get their monkey soaps. By the way, tomorrow's April Fool's Day.
Yeah.
Anyone who plays a prank on me, I'm going to punch them in the throat.
I'm going to stay away from Twitter all day.
Bubble Genius strives to be good to your skin while also being good to the planet. Most of their packaging is recyclable. They source their ingredients as close to home as possible, thereby supporting other local and domestic businesses while cutting down on fossil fuel consumption by not having stuff shipped from across the globe. They do their best to use organic ingredients when they're accessible and affordable, and their soaps are free of chemical detergents and surfactants. Go check out their sale items at bubblegenius.com. That's www.bubblegenius.com.
The Bob and Elvis Show.
Uh-huh. And I wrap
that
up.
Buy some soap, you fuckers.
Yeah, buy some soap. If you're not buying your soap from Bubble Genius, I can't. I have to ban you from listening to this show. You cannot.
You should feel free to suck it.
The show anymore. Yeah.
So I've got it up here. Yeah. The last valuated range was, and I sold this place for $345, if I'm remembering correctly. Mm-hmm. The last value range was $243 to $247. So it has tanked the fuck out.
Oh, no.
Yeah. The 5-year graph on this place is like a goddamn – like a ski slope.
Yeah.
I mean the area valuation is up at the high point 5 years ago around January 2000 – about midway 2006 mm-hmm. was at $445,000.
Oh,
and then just totally in the toilet. Wow. That is stunning.
You say so the value from its high watermark in 2005, 2006
in the area, yeah.
Yeah.
In the appraisal area, yeah, was $445.
Oh,
and
my God.
Is now down to $243.
So that house lost $200,000 in value. I assure you those people aren't there anymore.
No, not those people. No.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, and like I said, I mean, I'm sitting there at the closing table looking at just marvel, thinking somebody's going to come out and say, ha-ha, sucker. Boy, you know, my ass, we're paying you this much. I just couldn't believe it. I just could not believe it.
Right.
And it's just Northern Virginia. And it wasn't, you know, Sterling. It's in the middle of nowhere. It's west of Tyson's Corner. There's no metro anywhere near it. You know, maybe there's a bus. Like when I worked in Ballston, when I worked in Arlington, to get there without an HOV person or dummy, I would have to drive from Sterling to somewhere, get on a goddamn bus. The bus would take me to a metro, and then the metro I would get, you know, metro came up right underneath my office building. I mean, literally. But I mean, just all that just to get to, and it would take me an hour and some. 10 hour and 15 minutes to go, you know, as the crow flies, 30 miles. So God. What the fuck are people paying these prices for out in the middle of nowhere out there?
Yeah.
If I wanted to lateral out there, if I wanted to upgrade with just my income, we would had to move to like Harper's Ferry.
Yeah.
I mean, literally,
right.
the bullseye was just getting so far out away from civilization.
Yeah. I mean, there was one point in time where I was considering moving back to the D.C. area from Pennsylvania.
Oh, you just couldn't do it.
And there was no way. I was looking at the house prices. There was not a single family home in the entire Washington, D.C. metroplex that was less than $500,000. And this is, you know, this is at the height of the housing market.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I was looking
now
like.
Now they've maybe lost, you know, a quarter of that. And it's still outrageous.
Well, now, I mean, again, this goes back to what we were discussing. If your house is underwater, if your house poor, you're not out spending and contributing to the economy.
Fuck
so
no.
So who does? Yeah. Who contributes to the economy then?
Yeah.
So this goes back to the fundamental idea that I believe the Republicans are deliberately doing this. And how the hell do we possibly take them? Put aside Louis Gohmert and put aside Eric Cantor and all of these nitwits who are doing ridiculous things. There should be no reason why anyone would pay attention to the Republicans, considering that it was Reaganomics that put us into this hole in the first place. And so then, therefore, that should entirely discredit them. But here we are talking about meeting them halfway. Meeting them halfway? Are you kidding me? Unbelievable.
It's insanity. Yeah. But it just goes back to there's no cause and effect anymore in politics. You cannot get up and say politicians can't treat us like adults. I mean, they can't get up and say, look, we had this series of things and this and that, and the only way to fix it is blah, blah, blah. You can't get up there because the next day it's all, oh, Fannie Freddie and blah, 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 and government, you know, giving poor people houses. We're just all so steeped. I swear to God, our number one problem in this country is racism. I swear to God, I think
it really
that's
is.
True.
Yeah.
I swear to God, every meme, every Republican bullshit thing out there is just racism.
Yeah.
I just believe that. And all the teacot idiots, all the Republicans call me a jackass for saying that. I don't care. I still believe it's true. Everything
exactly
is wrapped
right.
up in class warfare.
You're exactly right. Exactly right.
I believe it.
Yeah. I mean, this is what the meme is that black and brown people buying homes, you know, that caused the Great Recession.
Yes.
That caused world economies to collapse.
And it was a Democratic Congress that forced it through, and Fannie and Freddie, you know, people buying homes.
Yeah, and it was
that
a gay
they couldn't afford.
It was a gay man and a Clinton who did it. It was Barney Frank and Bill Clinton.
Yep.
And a bunch of brown people.
Yeah. Defrauding good, honest white folk out of their good, honest white folk money because they wanted because everybody had to have a house. Now, the funny thing, I mean, there is NPR just did a whole thing on this. There is some truth to both sides. I mean, Fannie and Freddie was a miserably run operation. They took all this government subsidy and underwriting and all this guarantee and lined their fucking filthy pockets with it.
Yeah.
But there's no one cause and there's no one source. It wasn't Barney Frank going wild one weekend, you know, handing out checks to brown people. There was no one cause to it. It was just this giant clusterfuck storm of perfect storms.
But there was the philosophy behind all of it. And regardless of whether it was a Democrat or a Republican who did it, the philosophy that created this environment was Reaganomics, was Republican supply side economics.
Yeah, trickle down.
And that, trickle down. And that's what contributed to all of it. All of it. That is the source. That is the patient zero. That's the monkey from Outbreak that caused all of this shit.
Yeah. I mean, look at the last Republican president to balance the budget was fucking Eisenhower. And look at the tax rates under Eisenhower.
That's right.
60, 70, 80, 90% top marginal rates on the fucking super stinking wealthy. And they paid it and they shut their mouths because it was goddamn Ike. Ike told you to do it,
Ike.
Bitches. He would come and frog stomp your ass with those big boots of his. It was Ike, the last goddamn Republican president to balance a budget ever.
Yeah.
Eisenhower. And look at the tax rates. I don't understand why people can't get that. That even in the first – Reagan was president for 8 years. For 50% of Reagan's presidency, the top marginal rate was over 50%. 50 fucking percent.
Yeah.
Under Reagan. Why can't people do math anymore? Why can't they just take numbers into their fucking pointed, stupid skulls? Where you just look at somebody and go, try and understand what I'm saying to you. The top marginal rate for half of President Reagan's term was over 50%.
Yep.
Can you comprehend that? Hello.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, let's all go back to Reaganomics. Let's go back to 1982, shall we? Let's set the rate then. It'd be just massive rich people killing people with shotguns if that happened.
But don't you know that's liberal math? That's what Newt Gingrich called it, liberal math.
Yeah, they don't believe it. There's a whole meme out there that Clinton, that there was no surplus. There's literally people that will tell you, oh, that was a conspiracy. There wasn't any surplus. Yes, there was.
Yeah.
There was surplus. They ran on – the Republicans ran on – I was like, how can you tell me there was no surplus when Republicans ran on giving it back?
Right.
You can't have it both ways. You can't say there's no fucking surplus and then your candidate says, oh, that's your money. I'm going to give it back. Tax cuts. Mm-hmm. That's what they used to justify their tax cuts was the surplus.
Yeah.
Fucking – God. What the fuck? Just so stupid and childish in this country. It makes me so goddamn angry.
Yeah. And by the way, you know, it wasn't just George W. Bush. It wasn't Bush and the Republican Congress. Yeah, we did. Yeah, we had a surplus and they squandered all of it. And by the way, the Democrats also reduced the deficit. Their first or the first Obama budget reduced the deficit by $120 billion from the last Bush deficit.
Yeah.
Okay. So there's that fact. But it goes beyond George W. Bush. It goes back to Ronald Reagan. It goes back to that entire climate of the 1980s and just being indoctrinated into the heads of everyone. In order for Democrats to get elected, Democrats like Bill Clinton to get elected, they had to adopt that philosophy. And so they took it on and they did things that quite frankly are embarrassing to look at as a Democrat. I mean, and they're still doing
Clinton was no liberal.
Right? So when it confounds me, and you know that I routinely am very forgiving when it comes to the president. I strongly support the president. But sometimes, I mean, my God, when he says that, you know, it was the Republicans who drove us into this ditch, yada yada, they drove us, they caused all of this, and then to stand up, and then to actually, you know, and what we hear through news reports this week that we're going to meet these guys halfway. What, we're going to meet them halfway? We're going to meet the people who drove us into a ditch. We're going to meet them halfway. That's what we're going to do.
Right.
And then the whole family thing. That pisses me off, too, with the belt tightening thing. We covered that territory. But, I mean, that's what happens. That's what happens when we allow the Republicans to control the framing. We don't stand up strongly enough and say that, no, the Swift Boat veterans are liars. And the guy who funded them is not a patriot by any stretch of the imagination. But we can't say that because, you know, Dylan Radigan, he might be a good guy off the air.
What was even the context of that he had to call T. Boone?
They were talking about his wind turbine stuff. You know, like T. Boone Pickens is suddenly like the new Al. He's like the wingnut Al Gore.
Well, he does have he does have quite an energy plan, I guess. But I mean, he's call him a patriot, but he is all about alternative energy. That's for sure.
I don't trust him. I don't trust Boone Pickens, because Boone Pickens, he might be all about wind power now to get some sort of federal subsidy, which he will then, you know, and I don't know for sure what he's doing with this money, but then he's going to probably, you know, buy more oil wells or start doing more fracking in Pennsylvania with natural gas.
Yeah, what the fuck is all this fracking talk? I thought everybody had turned into Battlestar Galactica fans all of a sudden.
Yeah. Well, this is it. It's the process by which they extract natural gas, and it's actually poisoning the water supply, where people, it's at the point where you can light your water faucet on fire.
Oh, right. Yeah, I've seen that those stories. Yeah. Where the water coming right out of your tap is flammable. That's awesome.
Yeah. So I'm convinced that T. Boone Pickens has an ulterior motive, and why should I give him the benefit of the doubt? He has not earned the benefit of the doubt.
I mean, he's got these great big turbines in his mansion that run on brown people. Like, he has to feed brown people into his turbines, into his coal foundries.
But what has he done? I mean, what has he done to earn? I mean, this is what, going back to what I wrote in the Huffington Post again. What have the Republicans done to earn our deference, respect, and our vote? Nothing.
Yeah.
Nothing. Nothing. They're completely unserious. Another case in point. Here was the wrap up the show this week with a stupid Palin thing of the week.
No.
Here we go. She made up a word again this week.
She did, and it's a brilliant one.
It's a great one. If you haven't seen this yet, it's on Caroli posted this on Crooks and Liars. Here, Sarah Palin making up a word right here.
For this president. Yeah, and those are very legitimate questions on both sides of the aisle. And, you know, another big question that has to be asked, Greta, is, are we at war? I haven't heard the president say that we are at war. And that's why I, too, am not knowing, do we use the term intervention? Do we use war? Do we use skirmish? What is it? What I know is that U.S. interests are not being met if Gaddafi stays in power and if we are merely taking a back seat to the Arab League, to the United Nations, to NATO leadership, while we just kind of put our finger up in the air and decide what the political winds are around the world, not necessarily knowing and believing that the U.S. interest must come first in this.
So the word is squirmish.
Squirmish. And the woman's never heard of a fucking period. She's got the run-oniest sentences I've ever heard in my life. I swear to God, her sentences never end. Yeah. They just keep going and go. That's why she's so word salad-y. It's just one thought after another with no punctuation.
That's right. She's afraid that she's
squirmish. She said
if she pauses, the knowing is going to fall out of her ears.
Goes
or something.
Right out of her head. Yeah.
The words are just going to fall out some other way and not out of her mouth. If she stops for 1 second, that's it. She's going to spring a leak and she's going to shit and all her words are going to be on the floor instead of coming out of her mouth.
Squirmish. That's a good word. Gomert.
Gomert
and Squirmish.
Yeah. The new name of this podcast is Gomert and Squirmish.
The Gomert and Squirmish show, everybody. News and weather. We got traffic on the 10s. Gomert and Squirmish.
Gomert and Squirmish in the boarding.
It's like a law firm.
Oh, God.
Dewey, Cheatham, and Howe. Gomert and Squirmish.
I love it how the meme from the Republicans is that the president's dithering. He's dithering, he's taking his time, and he's dawdling, and we don't know what he's doing. Is he in? Is he out? Is it a war? Is it not a war? These are people who are then claiming, therefore, that they'd be much bolder, that their action would be much stronger and straightforward, right? Like George W. Bush, perhaps. The president's dithering, but yet not a single one of them are bold enough to declare their candidacy to run against this president.
Yeah.
So this guy, who's a dithering gay man, is the meme.
Most unpopular Democrat among Republicans ever, because, you know, he's Barack Obama, he's born in Kenya, and oops, he's also black. They can't find a single person to run against him.
And he's also a woman.
Yeah.
And this, I mean, that's what they've been saying, that, you know, we talked about this last week, but the whole idea behind this attack is coming from Sarah Palin and Rick Santorum and all these guys is that the president's gay. Yeah. I mean, that's what they're implying, but not a single one of them will declare their candidacy to run against him. They're afraid of him. And for such bold, brave people, mm-hmm. These shoot first and ask questions later people. Oh, they're taking their time, figure out, you know, the American people really want me. Is the message getting out there? Do I need to step in? And oh my God. They just don't want to run. They're afraid. They're afraid of the president. I mean, that's exactly, they're afraid to run against the president. That's why
they should be.
I mean, yeah, right. The big announcements. I mean, there were two big announcements from Newt Gingrich and Tim Pawlenty over the past couple of weeks, and it wasn't even to run. I mean, they gathered together in these big, you know, announcement press conferences with presentation videos and everything to announce.
For their exploratory committee.
An exploratory committee.
Yes, and pathetic.
And the president is dithering about war, and these guys can't even make up their minds to run for president. They can't make up their minds to run for president. What would they do in a war situation, for God's sake?
Well, you know what? They're all it's the ultimate political flop sweat. Any one of these guys in a room by themselves thinking, "Oh my God, I might have to debate this man in public."
Yeah,
that has got to. There's not a single one. Maybe Romney. You know, with just enough policy because he's a governor, and I mean, just enough wonkiness to get through. But the rest of them, can you imagine Obama and Pawlenty going at it in a debate? Oh my God, it'd be like Sugar Ray Leonard beating up like a 90-year-old man. Just I mean, what the fuck? It'd just be a slaughter.
It would be a bloodbath. Yeah, it would.
Yeah, the flop sweat that's got to produce in these people. They're just going to have to say no debates, and that's probably how they'd run it.
Yeah,
we're just not going to debate. That's a liberal media tactic.
Yeah. So I mean, basically, they're all waiting to see which one's going to be the first one in, and then they'll all start dump in. I mean, but we're only what 9-10 months away from Iowa, and not a single one of them has declared. I mean, seriously declared yet?
Yeah.
Oh, they're tough guys.
Oh, they're toughies. Ballsy patriots.
Manly men. All of them. Mm. Even Michelle Bachmann.
She's got the biggest balls of all of them.
That's going to be so much. She's definitely running. It's just a matter of when. And that's going to be lots of
she
fun.
May end up in the Veep slot. If Palin does it, she may end up, it may be, you know, Pawlenty Bachmann.
Romney Bachmann.
Romney Bachman. The Romney Bachman experience. I love them in the 80s.
How about Rand Paul? I think Rand Paul's a possible running mate.
He's cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs.
They all are. Rand Paul. Oh, God. What didn't we talk about this week? Oh, the Republican war against women continues.
Yes.
Women will fake rapes to get free abortions.
Well, you know they will. Yeah. They love to fake them the rapes.
Yeah.
Everyone loves to pretend they just got fucking raped.
Because it's so easy to fake a rape.
Yeah. Yeah. You got women all over the place shoving baseball bats up there. Oh, I got raped! Give me that abortion, that sweet, sweet abortion.
Oh, God.
Gotta have me the abortion. I love it.
So, yeah, and women will still vote for Republican. There will be a considerable number of women who still vote for these guys.
God.
Even though they go around saying that they, you know, women are going to fake rapes. Nice. Good people. Very serious. Hey, thanks for listening. Thanks for tuning in. Drive safely. You fudge with us, you fudge with the best. We'll be back next week for another show. Take care, everybody.
Gohmert!